There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Another couple hours of live local talk. And, of course, you're a big part of it. Text line 343-0106. Also, a reminder with the new FM Talk 106.5 app. You can text us. You can call us. You can also leave us one of those talkback messages. So once you've downloaded the app, App Store or Google Play, just look for FM Talk 106.5. No point between the 6 and 5. Download the free app. Does all kind of stuff. But one of the features on the front of the app, where you're listening to the stream, you'll see a microphone icon. If you'll press that, you can leave us a message for us to play back on the air. So check that out as well. Coming up on the show today, hour number two, Cameron Smith from AL.com and I will discuss one of the biggest political story of the day and President Trump pulling his endorsement of Beau Brooks. We'll get into that in hour number two. And as I talked about yesterday, and I know the morning show was talking about this morning, my guest this hour on Midday Mobile, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson joining us in studio. Good to see you.
Good to be here, Sean.
And I got to flip. There we go. I got to flip all the. There, I got to flip the switches. There we go. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Sean. Good to be here.
Yeah, good to get you in. And you know, you and I were already talking about having a sit down and a discussion here. But the events of late last week through the weekend put a catalyst on this.
Absolutely. You know, you just can't tolerate what we've seen this past weekend.
Yeah, I mean, last time we talked, you and I had some of the conversation on air and some of the conversation afterwards, and we used that term. It's not, we can't tolerate it.
Absolutely. You know, if I go back, you can go all the way back to 2013, right after being elected, and, you know, we had violent crime on the rise at that point in time. We came up with a plan of things that needed to be done, and we saw a dip in it because of the collaboration, cooperation we were getting with the courts. And so we know what can happen. We're just not there right now, but we've got to get there.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, we obviously had this string of gun violence that has made gun violence the talk of the town even maybe more than normal. But then I saw what happened Sunday night, even though that was the one event where no one was killed or injured. But a vigil for those dead, and there's gunfire ringing out at the vigil for them. And that, I mean, at that point, on Sunday evening, my phone was going nuts with just friends of mine. So I'm going, what the hey is going on?
So the word people ought to keep in mind is retaliatory. I mean, most of the shootings that we're having have to do with somebody trying to get even with somebody else. But we had our SWAT team there. We had the chief of police there. You know, just make sure that nothing happened.
Right.
All right, but when you are focused on trying to shoot somebody, you know, because they've shot your brother or your mother, whoever it is, it's very difficult for us to stop that. And so the more of these criminals that are out on the street because they're out on bond because they have shot somebody, the more targets there are and the more retaliation there is. And so it just feeds on itself.
Right. And that part of it, and I want to get into the criminal justice system that you had the presser. You talked about the criminal justice system being broken. But that retaliatory part, I remember when Director Batiste was Chief Batiste, and he and I talked about that same thing. He and I simplified it for me, Hatfields and McCoys kind of thing, right, back and forth. And he said, you know, that the point is that the person who is shot most often says they don't know who shot them when, in fact, they do. They do.
They do.
They do know who shot them. But they're going to skip over using the system.
That's right.
Judicial, law enforcement, whatever. They're going to move right to doing it on their own. To me, that's a hard thing to make an ordinance or legislation or something to overcome. That's a human part of it there, that why you wouldn't trust the system to do it.
Well, that's the society that we live in. And that's why we've got to do the one thing that we know that works. And it's unfortunate, because what you'd like to do is bring up our children and all not to do these things. Mm-hmm. But right now you have an element in our society that, you know, that really the only thing we can do to protect society is to put them in jail, mm-hmm. you know, to send them away. And until our society recognizes that and embraces it, and until our judicial system does their part of this, you know, you will continue to see this escalation. You'll continue to see it go on.
And we talk about that the links to that, because law enforcement can do their job and arrest somebody. Then law enforcement has ended. That's their part of it. It does go to the judicial branch. And we talk about people bonding back out, a conversation that's happened so many times on this show. And people are frustrated that when we have be on the lookout for somebody, the picture we're seeing is their previous mugshot from the last time they were arrested, which wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. So we have under Chief Bryan, we have a street detail. And it's made up some of our officers. Their sole purpose is to focus on the most violent offenders that we have warrants on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So since January 1, we've arrested 265 of them. Okay.
Wow.
Since January 1. Okay.
That's a bunch.
And so that's about 11 a week, something like that. Okay. So think about that. So we've arrested 11 a week of the most violent people we know. I don't know how many of them are still in jail, but what you have, if you visualize a box, so every week we're putting people into this into this box.
Taking them off the street.
Yep, and we're putting them here. All right, so how many of them are getting out, but how many of them are going to trial?
You know?
And then what is the consequence for that? If it's just let back out on the street, then we've done nothing.
True, and on the, you know, we have the idealistic part of it, to get those people in front of a jury of their peers and get them tried, and if they're guilty, sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of it is, in talking to the district attorney over time, that if they know the trial is 3 years away, maybe, the idea when people would plead, they don't do that. Because why? Because the chance of me seeing a jury soon is not happening. I'm not pleading right now.
Absolutely. You know, and so until you change that, I mean, and that's a delay, and the delaying tactics by the defense attorneys as a challenge, you know, in the system. But the longer you delay a trial, you may lose the policeman that made the arrest. You may lose witnesses to the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get to a point where you're not going to be able to convict them because of lack of evidence.
Now, the criminal justice system is broken. You talked about this at the presser. Also, people discuss the backlog in cases because of COVID. But how much of this is because of COVID, and how much of this can, if you pulled COVID out of the mix, would we be in some form of this problem right now? What
you'd
do you
still
think?
Be in this form. Yeah. You still would be, because we're
it's
not.
It's not just COVID's fault.
No, it's partially COVID.
Okay.
It's exacerbated by COVID, okay? But it's not all COVID.
Then we have something that just having COVID go away is not going to fix.
No. So let me just say a few things. There are people, obviously, it's hard for all the citizens, even your listeners, to understand everything, all the dynamics that we've been dealing with. But if you go back 3 years ago when our court system's been underfunded here in Mobile because of the state legislature not allocating enough money. So they came to the city and the county and said, well, y'all help fund us. So the city, first time ever.
Which is not the job of the city.
Not the job of the city.
Right.
We've been putting $500,000 into the court system over the last 3 years, as has the county.
So $1 million.
And then they, $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
Okay. So then they shut down during COVID. Okay. And so nobody's being prosecuted at that point in time, and nobody's going to trial.
Right.
All right. And so, but at the same time, post-COVID, when we realized how far behind we were, we started engaging, you know, with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and AOC about, hey, we need to do something to help the courts. Now, I was speaking to them on behalf of all 10 mayors of the largest cities,
right,
saying we need help. Well, we were able to get some relief. If you notice, that AOC raised the minimum, they raised the threshold for bail to be $1.5 million.
Right.
So our judges have the opportunity to increase bail to $1.5 million for these most violent, non-capital murder suspects. So we have been pushing every button that we know to push, you know, with the court system. We had approval to stand up the ninth courtroom, which has never been really used in the city of Mobile. The city is funding the clerical workers that have to work there to support
the
judge.
Which is not the job of city government.
So I'd say that comment simply to know that we understand what the role of the mayor is, but when we don't see any sense of urgency on our partners, you know, to help solve this problem, we're willing to go above and beyond what typically has been done to try to make it happen. But there are a lot of people, even in the judicial system, that don't realize all the things that we've done, you know, behind the scenes, to have conversations, to be an encourager, to be a team player. And so that increases the level of frustration, you know, that we have because we're not getting the results. And then when we have people in broad daylight shooting at our policemen, mm-hmm. I mean, it's time to draw the line and and call it out. And so we're not finger pointing. I mean, people are going to look at it as finger point, but it's not. I mean, we've been in the battle. We have been doing our – we know that we will do and accept our responsibility, and we will do more than what we're doing now, but we need the help of the judicial system to fix this thing.
All right. Takeaway, Mayor, is that this conversation, these allocations of funds that a lot of people don't know about that the city stepped into, and this conversation is not something that started Monday morning.
No.
Okay.
Oh, no.
I think for the discussion, and we can talk. I mean, you're getting pushback from judges here saying that it's you know, you're blaming them, but this is not out of the blue. This is something you said over a year, right?
Yeah.
Or more of this?
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, just one of the things is like to get be able to use this ninth courtroom, which we went and spoke to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and he agreed, you know, that we could take some of the retired judges and use them to hear cases. And the idea
it's like an emergency thing.
Yeah,
you're getting
this
folks,
is an emergency.
Yeah.
This is an emergency. So
okay.
he saw it. And then so he said, well, look, I'll give them the right to be able to go into that courtroom and hear trials. Okay, so he had to make that decision.
Almost like deputizing them in a
That's
way.
That's exactly right, because typically they couldn't go do this. So, and the idea was send the murder trials over there because of the backlog.
Mm-hmm.
Send the oldest cases.
Oldest, you know, and most violent.
Oldest cases that you're going to lose if you don't hurry up and get to them. And so, you know, we've been ready. And we also agreed, Sean, we agreed to pay for, and we designed the virtual courtroom for the municipal system. We stood them up so we know how they work. We know they do work.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted that to be done in the circuit courts. And so finally, really after about a year, maybe 8 months, you know, they found, well, okay, we can do this. But we're helping fund that, you know, so that they can continue on with the trials.
Wow. As we run the news break, a stat you've talked about and you talked about at the presser the other day, because mm-hmm. I've talked to the district attorney in the past, talked about 10,000 felony case backlog in our area. You pointed out the number of people with murder charges here. I want everybody to listen to this.
So there's 335 untried murder cases. There's 142 cases to be presented to the grand jury.
I haven't even seen a grand jury yet.
Murder. No. And then there's 193 that are just awaiting the trial, okay? So, but the number would be 335 murder cases that haven't been tried.
I mean, that is stunning, Mayor. Yeah. I mean, that number is stunning. I guess if people think that the way the murder numbers are out there, we're not talking about a year. You got to go back. That backlog is years.
We have one person in jail that's been there 7 years.
How? I mean,
I cannot answer that. We have some that have been there 5. We have some that have been there 4. Some that have been there 3. And I can understand, you know, if it was just 1 and 2 years, because it goes back to COVID.
Right. But 7?
Yeah.
Coming right back with Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson. We're discussing public safety and the challenges to getting this fixed. It's something that I know even the police chief the other day said, we can't arrest our way out of this. We need the judicial system. Law enforcement is part of it. So is the judicial system. Come back and talk with you about this next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Our guest in the studio, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, and a lot to discuss here on a public safety front. Enough that after a terrible weekend we had, I mean, you had a specific presser, and you discussed how to fix this. And part of this comes out that the criminal justice system is broken, to quote you, Mayor, right?
Absolutely.
It is broken. So,
But Sean, it's fixable.
Okay, that's what you take the words out of my mouth. Because you know me, how do we fix it, Mayor?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I really don't want to get into the telling judges how to run the judicial system. That's the last thing I need to. I've got challenges as being the mayor. But there needs to be a plan for how you're going to catch up with the backlog of cases. And what are we going to do?
Have they offered a plan, Mayor? Have they given, like, I mean, you talk about the detail with MPD that's arresting 11 a week, that they're doing that. Like, do they say, okay, well, if we get started on a Monday and is there a plan?
There could be. I'm not sure what it is. I do know that the conversation revolves around, you know, for the city of Mobile, what we want to do is stand up this ninth courtroom and channel the murder trials to that. You know, so
like
that
a specialty courtroom, yeah, where you're deputizing judges.
But get it done. I mean,
thank you.
Yeah.
A texter here says, the media should pull the dockets for each judge. It will clearly show which judges are extremely lenient on bonds, revocations, and sentences. So I tell you what, well, thank you, texter. We'll try to find that. Many people here, thanks for having the mayor on to clear things up. People, you know, I'm looking at similar. That was Kevin. This is John saying it. There are a lot of people asking the same kind of question here, which is pretty much what you just said. Let's fix it. We can look in the rear view and say, this was screwed up during COVID, but it was already an issue. But how do we here on this day in March fix this thing?
Yeah. So again, a lot of times you're speculating on what you need to be doing going forward. But if I look back at what we did do when we had great collaboration with the presiding judge, with the district attorney, with the U.S. attorney, and with the SAC at FBI. And the collaboration was, we were going to focus on these most violent offenders in the city of Mobile. We're going to make sure that we arrest them. They're going to go to trial, you know, and upon being convicted, they're going to be put in prison, okay? And so that happened, okay? And then just you had to start having a change up in personnel, you know? Again, if you go back to, you know, mm-hmm. the people that I mentioned, there's just a change up in personnel. And a lot of times it's just like having a national championship football team. You know, you've got the right players in the right position, willing to do the right thing. And so we've got, I think, competent people, but we've just got to get on the same page with understanding that we have got to bring people to trial and we've got to take those who are convicted and put them away.
The people on the judicial side, one of the reactions was that the ask is to violate the Constitution, you know, in doing this. This ask, the judges are following the law, and what we're asking is not within their domain.
My comment to that would be there are procedures, systems, laws in place to keep that at a minimum. You know, I'm not saying that in years past that wasn't abused, but I think in today's society, yes, it's concerned, but I think that is so much less of a concern than what we're dealing with. Somebody may make a mistake, violate somebody's rights, but that's going to be a mistake, and it will be brought out. You know, there will be justice served for that person. And so, but meantime, we can't not move forward for the fear that somebody's going to make us to err on that side.
I mean, what you pointed out, the law has changed, too. I mean, the increase in for bond. I mean, these things are now law, let alone that we do have to wait for a Nias law because it, y'all, I remind you, it's going to be on the ballot in November, constitutional amendment, vote for it. But that will be a help, too. That'll change the law.
Yeah, and you know that started right here in Mobile with the woman that got shot at Monterey Street.
Let's do this because we're going to run the news break. Can you tell that story? Because I think people need to hear how that started.
Yeah.
Okay, we're coming right back. More Midday Mobile. Our guest, Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, will get your questions answered as well when you ask him on the text line at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, continuing our discussion with Mayor Sandy Stimson, talking about the how to fix it part of what is a scourge. I call it a scourge, a thing that breaks my heart as a Mobilian, the gun violence in our city. Well, we went to the news break, Mayor. I had mentioned Anaya's Law. I've talked about it a lot on the show over the years, and that's coming up, y'all. Don't forget, November, it's going to be on the ballot. You vote yes on that. You said Anaya's Law started with, well, the city of Mobile.
It started right here on Monterey Street on at Monterey and Dolphin. And about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, lady was shot through the windshield. Luckily, it didn't kill her, put her eye out. And so we didn't think that young man, because there was no provocation, for him to do what he did. We knew that he would shoot somebody else. If unprovoked, he just went and shot somebody like that. And so he was let out on bail. Subsequently, he went and shot two more people in the short time after that. But during that proceeding, we called out the judge and said, do not, allow them to go out on bail. And the judge said, I have to. If you want to do something about it, you go change the law. Okay? So we immediately proceeded to start and have the law written to give the judges the authority that they could deny bail for these violent offenders. Now, there's circumstances. You have to prove that that person is likely to reoffend. You have to prove almost beyond doubt that he's going to reoffend, which you can a lot of times do. Anyway, so Jim Barber and Chief Batiste, Lawrence Batiste, they, for 4 years, they've been driving back and forth to Montgomery. First off, they didn't even have the name of Anaya's Law.
Yeah, until okay? the tragic death this of was just, Blanchard, this, yeah.
Yeah, and so anyway, so we are today now where it's going to be voted on, but, a judge told us he didn't have what he needed to get it done, said go change the law. I think that's he was right. Probably just being flippant.
Yeah.
And so we just said, okay, we'll go change the law, and that's what we're doing.
So these tools are available, this increased bond amount, when Anaya's Law comes through there. These are the things that you're giving the tools to the judges. But it goes back to the question. I'm just looking through the text line, Mayor, and they're asking, why aren't the judges getting it? Basically, people have asked this question. We're back to normal, and quotation marks here, normal on COVID. Why are we not back to a normal schedule in the judicial system?
They could be back to a normal schedule. The normal schedule is not what we need. We need something to focus. We need an accelerated schedule. We need
the
to focus on the criminal trials.
Is there an impediment that, is there anything in the law that I don't know that says you can't move? Because it seems to make sense. It's a triage list. If there's somebody for a violent crime that's 7 years old, that maybe a statute of limitations could run out, you try that first, and then you go to the one that's 6 years old, and then five, right?
But I really don't know, Sean, I really don't know what may constraints that they may have within the judicial system, and I'm sure there are certain things that they can't do that, let's say to the layperson, would seem simple that mm-hmm. they should do. I just don't know enough about it to be able to tell you that they absolutely can do this and that.
Zach says, major problem with local judicial system is the fact that our judges are literally elected to a lifetime appointment, since no one ever challenges a sitting judge in election. We do have challenges, but not as often as any other office.
We very seldom see a judge unseated.
That's, and that's on us.
Yep.
We the people.
Yep.
That's because they are running for office. You do have a chance to vote on it. I have a feeling people will be paying attention more than ever before on this.
They should be.
and because a lot of people will see it without thinking the other part of this is the criminal justice system. They only think law enforcement. Right? They think they're not arresting enough people, or they're not. You point out 11 a week.
Yeah.
Being arrested.
So if you just take the number of weeks in this year, so with this special street team that we have who are focusing only on violent suspects,
right.
Then it's 11 a week.
Then you've got those people coming into the process.
Yep.
But something's breaking down for us to have the backlog that
yep.
we do.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
All right. I want to talk about, because you talk about this special team, and it has me thinking about the police department and hearing Chief Paul Prine talking the other day. What about staffing?
Yeah.
Where are we in the staffing? What would be a full complement of officers for MPD versus how many we have now?
Yeah. So my understanding is we have 451 officers right now. And I'm going to guess a little bit. I ought to know the number, but it's in the probably the 490 range, you know, to have a full complement.
Okay.
And it may be as much as 510.
Okay.
But we, as you heard from probably Chief Prine, that we lost 110 last year.
Yeah, that's significant.
And so we have a crisis, you know, in policing. And when we look at the pay of what we're paying, now part of it, it's not just pay. I mean, every business owner knows that it's not always pay that causes you to lose someone. But what we see is that we train the officers. They stay in Mobile for 2 years, then they go to the sheriff's department. They go to Baldwin County, and they make, you know, $5,000 more. And it's not nearly
it's a widely known thing,
yes,
right?
It's a widely known thing.
They'll train them up, and they go elsewhere.
And they go elsewhere. And so if we raise, every time we give a raise, they give a raise. And they can stay ahead of us because they don't have to have as many officers.
Right.
So they can kind of cherry pick what we have. But that's... We deal with that. That's why we've gone to having a full-time recruiter trying to fill these classes. That's why we've gone, instead of two recruit classes a year, to having three recruit classes a year. You know, again,
but you got to keep them, right? I mean, all the
that's
folks
right.
I talk to,
it's got to be retention. So how do you retain them? So, you know, one of the things that's in the conversation right now is what are we doing about pay? Well, in 2013, I would say the officer, the beginning officer, was making $27,000 a year. So now that beginning officer is making $40,000 a year.
Wow, since 2013 to now.
Since 2013. So, I mean, okay. People can do the arithmetic, but we're still behind.
Low back then.
Okay.
Wow.
And so, you know, what we're trying to do now is we want to give incentive pay, and the incentive pay is really for two different groups. It's one, we call it shift incentive, and we call it on-call incentive. One is really for our patrolmen in uniform. Other is for the detectives and for the homicide unit and for the traffic. So between those, what it would amount to is $200 a week, 26 pay periods, so it's $5,200 a year.
Okay.
And that's for lieutenants and down.
Okay.
And so really the biggest impact is going to be on our lowest paid personnel.
Okay.
And that's where you want to make sure, I mean, you don't want to be losing lieutenants and captains and so forth, okay? But we've got to raise the lowest paid personnel and get them up, you know, and I'm going to say in that $45,000 range.
Right.
And it's going to be done through incentives. And, you know, it kind of creates a stir when we start talking about something like that. But we've got incentives in the fire department. Like if you're a paramedic, mm-hmm. you know, you get this. And so it's not...
Incentives for additional skills or tenure or what? How do you do
well
that?
This what we're talking about for this is really we're calling it shift incentive and on-call incentive.
Okay.
And really the person that I think that can best explain this and is really Chief Barber.
Okay.
He's crafted this plan and I know this conversation about it, but he is the best really to explain it, maybe where I may leave something out.
Mm-hmm.
He'll dot every I and cross every T.
All right. Well, he and I will have to. If you're listening, we'll get him on the show to talk about that more. Because yeah. I mean, the maybe this is flippant, but the note I made in preparing for today was, hey, Mayor, well, let's just make sure we pay more than the sheriff's department.
Yeah.
The folks at the sheriff's department, my friends, are listening. But I mean that's they're going okay. We're going to take cherry pick these people, right?
Yeah. Hey, we're going to pay more.
Okay.
Okay.
But that's,
if Sam was sitting here, he'd say, thank you, Mayor, we're going to pay more too.
Yeah. But I mean, and that's open.
Hey, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but we still have to be able to retain the police officers, and a lot of it has to do with the work environment, you know.
Okay.
And so it's not just, as I said, pay.
If you have commensurate pay and you like where you are, you stay where you are.
And if you have the proper supervision throughout the department, mm-hmm. that is a big deal. That's a lot to do with it. And so I think that we've got the right leadership in the department as we speak right now, that some of the turnover that may have been due to something other than pay, you know, I think that we've addressed that issue.
You know, institutional wisdom, a term that comes up when I talk to law enforcement folks, but it goes, I mean, you're a businessman. We get it. There's people in your company that because of institutional wisdom are worth so much more to retain and to be able to train others.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And as I think about where we are from a training standpoint, equipment standpoint, the technology standpoint, the tools we have to help us in finding let's say the suspects that we're searching for, you know, they're unparalleled. I was sitting in a meeting the other day with couple of guys from the FBI, and one of them made a comment to the other. He said, in all my career, I've never seen a city or heard of a city that's doing what Mobile is doing as far as the collaboration with all their federal partners and the things that they're doing to try to protect the city. He said, it doesn't exist where it's city-led.
Well, I've heard the same from law enforcement, say local law enforcement, that says the cooperation with the federal law enforcement has been a big benefit to our city and our county.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So on this front on policing and the law enforcement side, even though the discussion here is we've got a hole in the bucket, and it seems to me from what we've is on the judicial system here, but new technology. We talk about manpower. But ShotSpotter, I don't know, it may not have the right term, but that discussion's come up, and I know it was in the conversation the other day in your press conference. Is this a sea change for dealing with gun violence, or is this just another tool? I mean, where do you rank it?
I'm going to make two really radical comments.
Okay, I like it.
Okay. So you take ShotSpotter.
Okay.
And you could add 100 policemen to the police department, and neither one of them are going to make any difference if you don't fix the judicial system.
Well,
now, we want all the tools that we can get, LPR cameras, the shot mm-hmm. spotter. We need those. It will help us. But we've got to fix the
can't arrest your way out of
just,
it.
Absolutely. And that's what the shot spotter will help us do. It will help us find those, you know, who are perpetrating the crimes in a more expeditious manner. And we'll be able to take some of those guys off the street, you know, because of that. But still.
But if they bond right back out, Mayor.
That's exactly right, you know. Sean, I want to flip back to talking about what we're trying to do with the policemen, because it always creates other conversation among other departments in the city. And we've asked the other executive directors throughout the city to give us comparative pay analysis, you know, for their personnel.
Okay.
Because I started off the conversation saying we want and we expect the city to be able to pay comparative wages, you know, to all of our city employees. So we've reached out, and we haven't gotten some of that information back, but as we're looking into the next budget year, we're already budgeting in, you know, an opportunity to pay everybody more money. But where the crisis is in policing. But right. Without the comparative pay analysis for whether it's public works, whether
all
it's
departments,
all the departments. I mean, you don't really know if there needs to be a other than just an across-the-board raise.
Are those, I just going to ask this, though, are those departments, because compared to what a city our size would pay mm-hmm. people, but are those other departments short-staffed, like you just said the police department is?
Not like the police department is, no.
Okay.
You know, we don't have a challenge in the fire department to speak of. Okay. We don't see the turnover that we have.
Other city services, yeah. Are they?
You know, it's always a challenge in public services having to do with trash and garbage,
mm-hmm.
But it's still not to the degree that it is in the police department.
All right, we come back from the break. I do have just a couple questions that aren't specifically about this that I want to run by you. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about that, and got some from the text line. We return next right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:52 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Continue our discussion with Mobile Mayor Sandy Stimson, and talking a lot about public safety, and that's a conversation that obviously continues. But the criminal justice, the judicial system being broken. Fixing it is, that's why I like, forget what's in the rear view. Let's look forward and how we fix it. And you're talking about some of those things like the additional courtroom. And I think there's a lot of people looking at the text line right now that are engaged in having the judicial system figure out a plan, present a plan to get through this.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, Sean, it's fixable. You know, and you can think about, it just takes the collaboration. As I said earlier, you got to have the district attorney, and it helps to have your federal partners like the FBI, the U.S. attorney, you know, cooperating with the presiding judge and the mayor, and we can make this happen.
All right. We'll keep talking about that. One non-public safety thing as we wrap up, because I got the questions from all kind of things. What's the mayor doing about the Civic Center?
So it's a very exciting subject. to me, because we have kind of a timeline of we've got to get some stuff done. I'm not so sure that if you went back and asked Mayor Dowell, you know, he was trying to figure out, you know, what can we do? And I know Mayor Jones looked at it, and we've been looking at it. Okay, and it's very frustrating that if it was simple,
now,
I guess we would have done it.
Three have been tasked with this. So,
yeah. So we're running out of time, and yeah. It's going to be on my watch, okay? So that's why we've hired Populous, you know, to go in.
And they are, who's Populous?
Populous is an architectural firm that really came into the Birmingham Civic Center there, and they redesigned it.
The BJCC people.
That's right.
Okay.
But they've done it all over the country. I think they've done 110 of these projects around the country. And so what we really want to know is, what can we do with what we have? What would it really cost to renovate it? But put the necessary bells and whistles in there, and I'll use a specific example. What does the rigging need to be, you know, in the arena so that you can have larger bands, you know, because they just travel differently and they set up differently.
Laser light show
so
thing and all that.
The point would be, how can we renovate it to get different things that are needed to give us more options for shows or for whatever use we want to have? And so they're going to come back and they're going to say, you know, Mayor, it's going to cost this much money. We think that if you do these things, you could attract these type of events, which today you can't do.
Okay.
And so then we can extrapolate that into what does the revenue stream look like, figure out what the cost is, and then you can compare that to tearing it down and just starting, you know, from the ground zero,
right,
and building new venue, whatever that may be.
Because, I mean, I remember this discussion, like you said, it's been going on for a long time, that if you did a certain amount of renovation, you lost a grandfather clause, and the ADA compliance issues would be this much more money and all that. Is that still in the discussion?
And that would be what Populous is going to look at. They've got to look at all of that. Okay, so we'll know much more in 90 to 120 days.
They're going to give us a report that says, okay, here's what it costs. I mean, this like a punch list.
That's
okay,
right.
You're going to do these things. This costs this much to do. But if you do these things, these folks, you'll get this band or this kind of band, and you can make this much money.
That's what I hope for is. Yeah. And so then you compare that to what your other options are.
Then you go, yeah, what's the bulldozer cost, right?
Right, yeah. And what does it cost to do the plan that Cordish was suggesting, but we never had a number on what the Cordish plan was going to really cost.
His numbers are important.
We're only going to do it based on what the numbers are.
Right.
You know, because Mobile, I think Ashley Tolan did a great job talking about the Civic Center in Lanyap last week, where she says Mobile should have learned the lesson by now. It's not you build it and they will come. We've shown that we've built a lot of things and people hadn't come, but hopefully we will learn from past eras and hopefully not make them going forward.
But what you're discussing here, maybe if it is a renovation, it is a thing that people do come to, but how can we get more people coming to this thing, right? We're not reinventing a wheel, we're making a better wheel, maybe.
That's exactly right, yeah.
All right, and that's Populous.
That hasn't been decided that's what we're going to do, but we need to know the numbers before we can decide what it is we're going to do.
Right, so that's what Populous is tasked with, is coming back. So you're going to get a sheet and you'll be able to share it with all of us that says, you know, here's how much it's going to cost, here's what it brings.
Yeah.
Okay, something I can understand. Mayor, I appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming in and talking with all of us. I know that we've got a hill to climb here. I'm glad you're looking for solutions.
Yeah. So, Sean, talk radio is so important today. There's so many people that get their information from talk radio, so we appreciate what you do. You know, it's a sad state of affairs. We don't have a daily newspaper, you know, to put heat on the mayor or to put heat on the judicial system.
That's what I'm here for.
Or maybe or to put heat on Sean Sullivan because he's not doing something right. So we miss that part of the printed media, you know, really doing that.
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of, Mayor, where I think we fill in. And that's what, you know, 13 years ago, we decided, hey, there's got to be some discussion that's local like that. And so we're happy to do that part. And we're happy that you come in and talk with us. And please come back and do it again soon.
Hey, we're ready. Standing by.
All right. Mobile Bear Sandy Stimson, our guest. We're coming back hour number two. State and federal news in the mix. They talked about it this morning and during Jeff's show as well. Did you think 6 months ago? Now, be fair on the text line. Don't sandbag me here. Do you think 6 months ago you talk about Congressman Mo Brooks being third in the Senate race and that the endorsement from former President Trump would be pulled and possibly go to, what's your guess, which one? I would say, come back, I'll tell you who I think it's going to go to, and we'll talk about that with Cameron Smith from AL.com. It's all straight ahead. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5.